Welcome to the podcast of Media Matters with Bob McChesney, a weekly show on media from WILL Radio. Visit us at will.uiuc.edu.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign this lovely Sunday, September 10, 2006. We have a wonderful show for you today. There's been a lot of talk on this show and, of course, in the news for quite some time about the war in Iraq. Today we're going to have a filmmaker discussing his brand new film, exposing the degree of corruption and war profiteering in Iraq, and truly a hair-raising film. Join us today with Robert Greenwald live on the phone from Los Angeles discussing Iraq for sale. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Congress is now back in session, and the Senate has yet to schedule a vote on major reforms to telecommunications law. The pending legislation does not include any meaningful provision for protecting the principle of network neutrality online, even though more than a million people have signed a petition sponsored by the SaveTheInternet.com coalition asking that Congress preserve internet freedom. The grassroots movement for net neutrality drove home that point the week before Congress reconvened by holding petition drops at senators' offices in more than two dozen cities around the country, like New York.
Unless we fight for internet neutrality, the information superhighway will become a big bucks boulevard for megacorporations, where discrimination rules and millions of people who need the internet to communicate and do business will be left behind.
Boston.
How are we going to have a marketplace of ideas if the marketplace of ideas is for sale to the highest bidder?
Detroit.
We don't want to regulate the internet. The problem is that cable companies and phone companies want to actually rig it.
Des Moines, Iowa.
As a student, I want to have equal access to every source of information.
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
I think the internet is just a fabulous thing. It promotes democracy and just, you know, level exchange of information and ideas. And I think it would be a tremendous tragedy if during my lifetime I saw it both come into being and then disintegrate.
And Honolulu.
I'm a 71-year-old who wants to communicate with his children and grandchildren, who wants to be able to go online and not have my telephone company or cable company tell me what websites I can see, what time I go on, and what I have to pay.
In just these six cities, petitions with some 120,000 signatures were represented. The petition drops convinced at least four senators to go on record in support of network neutrality, bringing the number of senators in favor of internet freedom up to 26 as of September 7th. 14 senators are on record as backing major phone and cable companies' plans to create a tiered internet. Four are classified as waffling, while the rest have yet to take any position on the issue.
As for the phone and cable companies, their high-priced lobbying effort against the preservation of internet freedom continues apace in Washington, D.C. This includes the formation of new AstroTurf front groups, the latest of which is the American Consumer Institute. What the group does not disclose is that its founder used to be the chief economist for Bell Atlantic, now named Verizon, and still works on the side as a consultant to the telecom industry. With regard to more traditional forms of largesse, phone and cable companies are being quite generous with campaign donations this year. Several million dollars have been funneled into campaign coffers, with about two-thirds of it going toward Republican incumbents. As for the sponsor of the Senate's telecom legislation, Ted Stevens of Alaska, he's pocketed tens of thousands of dollars in telco campaign contributions, even though he's not up for re-election until 2008. Stevens was also recently outed as the senator who invoked his prerogative to indefinitely delay the consideration of a bill designed to cut back on the practice of adding pork barrel spending projects to unrelated legislation. A former member of his staff was paid more than $250,000 in the first 6 months of this year by phone and cable companies to help lobby for passage of Stevens' telecom legislation. Meanwhile, other government agencies with theoretical oversight over online access continue to downplay the threat of data discrimination. The Federal Communications Commission has already declared its disinterest in net neutrality, and just recently, the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, the primary agency charged with policing phone and cable companies for anti-competitive behavior, announced the creation of a symbolic task force to further explore the issue, though it was couched in talking points that could have come straight from the mouth of a telecom lobbyist. Congress's fall session is only scheduled to last until October 7th. However, it may adjourn early so as to give incumbents more time to campaign before the November 7th elections.
And now, here's a Media Minute's Fast Fact. The automation of journalism is alive and well, and it's happening first in the world of business news. Thomson Financial, a provider of investment news, has unveiled a process by which it uses computers to parse corporate press releases and turn them around into stories which can run in print or online. Thomson brags that it can churn out computer-generated copy in as little as 0.3 seconds from the time the company releases its information and has been doing so since March. However, they are not the only ones engaged in automatic journalism. The Reuters news service admits it uses computers to write some of its business news, but won't say how much. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you at WILL AM 580 from beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Today, we have a terrific show for you with a live guest calling us in from California. Robert Greenwald, producer, director, and political activist, is our guest today. He's produced countless films in fictional genre and more recently as political documentaries, best known perhaps for Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, which came out in 2005, Outfoxed, Rupert Murdoch's War on Journalism, 2004, and Uncovered, the Iraq War in 2003. Greenwald has a brand new film that we're going to be talking about today, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. But before I bring Robert onto the line, I should also add that before becoming a political documentarian, Robert Greenwald had an extraordinary career as a film director and producer in Hollywood, garnering 25 Emmy nominations, 4 Cable Ace Award nominations, 2 Golden Globes, the Peabody Award, the Robert Wood Johnson Award, and 8 Awards of Excellence from the Film Advisory Board. And he was awarded the 2002 Producer of the Year Award by the American Film Institute. Well, Robert Greenwald, welcome to Media Matters.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You've been a guest for each of your last few films. We've had the privilege of having you on the air to discuss them. And even before I saw the new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers, which I had the privilege of watching this weekend, I guess before the release, I was thinking of the famous quote of Franklin Delano Roosevelt from 1940 on the eve of America's entry in World War II. And FDR said, "I don't want to see a single war millionaire created in the United States as a result of this world disaster." And that thought was with me throughout the entirety of watching Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. What motivated you to make this film? What was your thinking behind it?
Well, I actually wasn't ready to do another film because we just finished a Walmart film and we were all, a small group and overextended, and we were sort of thrilled with the response, but figuring we'd take some time to get our act together to do some fundraising. And I was talking to Bob Orsage from the Campaign for America's Future, and he said, there's one issue that nobody's doing, and if you could get it, this was in January, by the way.
January of this year.
Yeah. He said, if you could get it done and out by the fall, he said, I think there would be a chance to impact the election because it's not being discussed. It should be discussed. And if you have it in September, it'll be forced into the debate around issues. So I said, oh, damn it, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we were tired and all. And then, right in the sense that it hadn't been touched. What I thought I would do would be a film with essentially facts and statistics. But as I got into the material, I discovered these were these wrenching, gut-pulling personal stories of death and destruction, because what happens with large corporations, by their nature, they are focused on making money and cutting corners. And when you put them into a war situation, they make money, they cut corners, and people's husbands and fathers and best friends die.
Yeah, having seen the film, my initial thought when I heard about the film was it would just chronicle the corruption of firms that sort of gouge the taxpayers and make a lot of money while others suffer. But the story does go way beyond that, to the quality of life for the troops, for the quality of, not just life, quality of their ability to be soldiers effectively and to survive in Iraq. And even what was striking to me, and I was unaware of, was the role of these contractors, these firms on large contracts participating in something like the Abu Ghraib prison interrogations.
Yes, when we began the research and soon into it, one of my colleagues came across that, and I said, wait a minute. And this is where, by the way, it's very interesting how powerful film is. I said, wait a minute, that can't be true. I would have read about it. And he said, go back and look at the articles. When you go back and look at some of the news articles, they do mention it, but it's a line or it's two lines or it's three lines, and its impact is not nearly the same as when we have on camera interrogators who work for private corporations making a profit telling us they were at Abu Ghraib and they were paid to do what they were doing, which was scandalous. And so I was completely unaware of that. I was unaware of the fact that this corporation, Titan, provides huge number of the translators all across Iraq, that they're ill-trained, and that, again, some of the dangers to the troops are coming back to haunt us because translators get hired who haven't been properly trained or haven't been properly vetted and have an axe to grind, and wrong information gets passed on. But at its core, it raises the issue of profitization of a war, right? I mean, do you allow that very idea to be introduced? And how has it happened without any real debate about it? That, to me, is just scandalous.
Now, Robert Greenwald, in the past, I mean, is this something new, or is this how our wars were conducted in Vietnam, Korea? I take it wasn't that way in World War II, or else FDR would have been, swallowing his words.
Well, there's been outsourcing of limited function, and it has grown, even in the Revolutionary War. Apparently, there was a private contractor who provided some food. But what we've had in the Iraq War, for both ideological reasons and also because of these guys getting caught with their pants down and not having nearly enough men and women, is an enormous jump forward in terms of billions of dollars and the roles. So what you have, where maybe in the past somebody would provide food, let's say, for a troop or a cleaning service, well, now you have men and women worked from the military working right next to a contractor who's getting 3 to 4 times the money they're getting for exactly the same job. And in fact, if you go to our website, iraqforsale.org, we just put up a whole clip of, which is not in the movie, of this one soldier, David Mann, who was in a a little bit of it's in, but not the full thing. He was in a division over there that was highly trained in communications. What happens, and this, I really, my jaw dropped when I heard this story. I mean, I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's just so scandalous in terms of corporate behavior. His whole unit's over there, highly trained, have the equipment, working communications. Halliburton comes over, and just like it was a corporate takeover, they tell his unit, you can't do this anymore. The unit has to stop what they're doing, train the non-trained Halliburton workers, give them the equipment, and then sit around watching the Halliburton workers do what they in the Army had been trained and had been doing.
And probably not doing it anywhere near as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the striking things, Robert Greenwald, about the new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers, is the much greater expense that comes about as they privatize what were once normal military functions that military personnel did. They become much more expensive, and they're done with much less accountability to make sure the job gets done properly.
Yeah, the original argument, a bill of goods, if you will, was that it was cheaper, and possibly in limited short periods of time, certain functions may be cheaper. But there's no question now, given that there's no accountability and that it's going on, that it's much more expensive. And what we're having is subcontracting to subcontracting to subcontracting. So you literally, and again, we have stories of this in the film, you might have, Halliburton might get the contract. Then they subcontract it to somebody who takes a piece. Then that company subtracts it to a second and a third. And finally, some third country national is getting $4 a day with four big corporations kind of on his back, if you will, taking large pieces of that contract.
Our guest today on Media Matters is Robert Greenwald, the noted film director and producer who has a brand new film, A Rock for Sale, The War Profiteers, coming out right away in the very near future. You can learn about the film and about Robert Greenwald at the website, rockforsale.org, or at robertgreenwald.org. Go to either one. Robert, when is the film coming for general release?
Well, because we do alternative distribution, there is a series of dates. It's opened in New York and Los Angeles and Houston in movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
But you can order right now on the website, and you'll be receiving it in the next, by September 20th or 25th, so you should order it now. And then in October, we're going to have house parties. And, of course, the crucial thing with all the films is, as you, Bob, know and have supported us in very important ways, is that they're a tool. And the films are only successful if the listeners not just get a copy, but then show it to a friend, to a school, to a church, someplace. It's a way that I've discovered for myself and for the hundreds of thousands of people now who buy them and use them, it's a way to be active and to do something other than merely write a check. I mean, it's really a way to participate in democracy.
If listeners want to call in and speak with Robert Greenwald, the phone number here at Media Matters, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And I imagine, Robert, when I first met you, which was about 4 years ago, and you were just getting started in all this, it was before you had done your first Iraq film, and you'd, I think, produced the film in the 2000 presidential election at that point. Since then, you've really thrown yourself into this, and now you're producing what seems like almost a film a year. You're directing, and you've built up this distribution network. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're building over there and what your vision is?
Yeah, well, what I've discovered, and I sort of backed into it, is this alternative distribution that we at Brave New Films do is really the most effective way to reach people with film. And let me just take a minute to say, you know, the traditional thing, people come up to me, and it literally happened in New York the other night. We had this wonderful screening, and people came up, and this guy said, oh, you've got to get it into 1,000 movie theaters. And I said, no, we're going to do much better. We're going to get it into 5,000 or 6,000 schools, homes, and churches. And he says, well, why is that better? And I said, well, think about it for a minute. I mean, I love going to the movies. I love buying my popcorn and paying too much for the Diet Coke, you know, and sitting there. But who is going to spend $7, $8, $9, or $10 to see a documentary on a subject where either they don't care, they don't know very much, or they're strongly in disagreement with the point of view? Zero. It's even hard to get people to watch it when it's on television if they're not interested or they disagree. But with the alternative distribution, again, you go to everyone has a relative they fight with. Everyone has some friend they disagree with, or they're at school or church or, you know, pizza parlors, bowling alleys, every place you can reach out with these films. So we're now passionately committed to alternative distribution as a way, essentially, it's the great one-line lesson from the Internet, which is peer-to-peer. And the film serves peer-to-peer because people get them and then go out and use them in different ways. So what we're setting up is a system of, really, it's called Brave New Theaters. Anybody with a film, not one that we've made, can go on, put the film up there, and use our software to arrange screenings and house parties and helping organize an alternative way of making sure that your movie is seen. So that's kind of step one of what we want to do for the future.
Robert, have many people taken advantage of this opportunity with Brave New Films, Brave New Theater?
It's just started, and a few have already, and of course we haven't had any time to focus on it. And I hope after Iraq for Sale is launched that we'll be able to raise some funds and hire a person or two to help spread the word and to help guide filmmakers through the process. Although it's pretty simple, Jim Gilliam, who created it, who's one of the Brave New Films partners, really did, quite a brilliant job. So I think we've had about 6, 7, 8 movies up already. But you don't even have to make the movie. You know, let's say, Bob, you want to show Inconvenient Truth, the Al Gore movie. It's on DVD, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to have a screening, and you want it on the campus. Well, you can go on. You put it. You buy your copyright regular way. But now you go on to Brave New Theaters. and you say on, you know, October 15th, I'm having it in this lecture hall, and I want 200 people to sign up. Or I want to have it in my home, and I want 5 people to sign up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be the maker of the film. It can also be an organizing tool for people who just want simple software to help spread the word.
Robert Greenwald, our guest today on Media Matters. The phone number here, 333-9455, toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Robert Greenwald, filmmaker, producer, and director of the brand new film, Iraq for Sale, The War Profiteers. I've seen your entire corpus of documentaries, Robert, and I think this one, they're all good, but this one really was striking. I mean, it was really terribly moving. And you were talking before about one of the problems of putting films like this in theaters is you might have an audience that strongly disagrees with the content or the political argument. This film, unlike any almost any political documentary I've seen, and certainly any of your earlier films, I can't imagine what the argument is against this one. I mean, to me, this film really is dealing so directly with corruption in a way that is antithetical to anyone's values. I really don't know who's going to argue with you on this and say, no, this is a really good system. Are there people who say you're getting it wrong, that what the Halliburtons of the world are doing over there making lots of money is benefiting us?
Well, I think they'll find some euphemism. The intent was exactly what you said. I carefully did not take a position on the war, by the way, because I wanted this tent to be as large as possible. And I wanted even people who were in favor of the war, and we have some in the movie, like Ralph Peters, the lieutenant colonel, I wanted them to be able to say and participate, saying no matter what you think of the war or who you voted for, this is totally wrong and has to be stopped. Now, the reason for that, of course, is the great line, first you divide, then you conquer, which we used a bit in Walmart, too, to try to make the widest possible tent and bring people in where we could find areas of agreement. I think Chomsky calls it chipping away at the weak spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And this is certainly one. And of course, what I want to raise is the issue of war profiteering. I think it's a potent, frankly, electoral issue because there have been 4 votes on it. And people can go to the website and see how did their senator vote?
Both in the House and Senate, or all in the Senate?
Both. There have been 3 votes in the Senate and 1 in the House.
Okay.
Waxman bill in the House, you know, it was basically a simple thing. Anybody who had, I think it was anybody who had been caught with, he had some nice euphemism, but basically stealing over $100 million, we wouldn't do business with anymore, which would have meant Halliburton. And they voted it down. So people can go, and then they can go back to their member of their House and say, now, the argument that I'm sure they find is always...
Wait, before we go into where can they go to find this information if we wanted to look up our member of the House?
If you go to iraqforsale.org,
okay.
And there's a legislative section, and we've got the information there.
Okay, terrific. Well, go ahead, proceed.
Yeah. I think to answer your, key question, which is what would be the argument against it, is it's genuinely cloaked in a euphemism, which is it's a crisis, it's wartime, we have to move quickly, and, of course, the argument we're going to take away from them big time is we have to support the troops. In fact, the week we're having in October when we're asking people to do house parties is Patriots Against War Profiteering, because I want to take the very patriot word back on this one.
Yeah, one of the striking features of the film is talking about exactly how these firms, and Halliburton, one that gets a lot of attention, but there are many others. To be honest, I didn't heard of a bunch of these companies. They're not, I guess their whole business model is just getting government contracts. So they're not going to be in the mall or on advertising on television. And just the effect it does have on the troops on the ground. Could you talk a little bit about what you discovered?
Well, what I discovered, what I had no knowledge of going into this, was several things. That what I had mentioned before, that a member who has is in the military and is doing it because that's their job, and they're there to do their duty, if you will, right next to them is someone's being paid 3-4 times the same amount. It's devastating, number one. Number two, lots of times the military is now being called upon to guard Halliburton convoys going up and back across the country. So suddenly they're putting their lives at greater danger because of Halliburton traversing Iraq. Number three, a lot of the money, this is a zero-sum game, right? So the more money that goes into the profit. Now, the head of Halliburton last year, between his salary and his stock, made $40 million, David Lazar. That is scandalous. That is just obscene.
And again, so our listeners.